Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 226.
This week on the podcast, a not nearly embarrassed enough new Congress was sworn in today, so add those new reps to your speed dial.
And Congress's plan to erase their own oversight is praised by the Donald, then thwarted by the Donald, then mocked by the American people, then praised by the Donald. Just another day in Trump's news cycle.
Plus a Trump cabinet update. It only gets worse.
And the media's continuing to give the president-elect credit for business deals he's not involved in.
Plus, Schumer's Trump resistance plan is evidently work with your captors.
And Donald Trump rings in the new year with mobster and convicted felon Joey No Socks, which is just so perfect.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right. Boy, I couldn't say Joey No Socks without laughing, but I still can't. Try it. Try saying Joey No Socks.
Try to
without refer laughing in the middle
to
of it.
A real man named Joey No Socks. And see how well you do.
Oh God. It's Happy New Year, guys.
Happy New Year. Welcome to January.
Yes.
Either the beginning or end of the apocalypse. It's hard to know. 2016 seemed terrible. 2017,
maybe worse. Everybody kept talking about how bad 2016 was, and I was like,
Trump is not the president yet.
I was like, why? So start telling me how 2017 is going to be better.
It's not going to be.
It's not going.
We're just in a bad. Brent's sick.
It's certainly not better. When was the last time we were both healthy on this podcast, by the way?
This winter has been a nightmare. Political nightmare, a germ-fueled nightmare.
It really has been. And the thing that brings on my cough, because I finally feel fine. I was on my deathbed last week.
Sure, sure.
But like,
we all had the deathbed week.
The thing that brings on the coughing is laughing. So
yeah,
that's
so try to stay
here.
Somber.
Don't say anything funny on this podcast.
Do my best.
And it's impossible.
It's
you
not
going
to happen.
You can't not do it.
No, I mean, yeah. I'm hilarious. today, though, I was going to say Gesundheit. You don't say that for coughing, though. So just.
No. No, it's fine.
Hopefully, good work. Good luck.
I've got tea, so hopefully that'll do something.
Yeah. Today's the first day of the new Congress.
Yes.
So today, we had the excitement of the swearing in of our senators and congresspeople.
It's
and
the last
swearing
time Joe
out.
Biden gets to do it, too.
I know.
And he was up to his general shenanigans.
I mean,
he
as
kissed
always.
Chuck Grassley's wife on the mouth
I bet.
And did various other things.
Like, probably inappropriately touched everyone.
Yes.
I mean, that just, Uncle Joe is
I know.
Not going to lose an opportunity to
God.
Do that.
Here's something that'll depress you for 2016. Think about Mike Pence doing that.
Oh, God. Ugh. Ew. Oh.
Sorry.
Thinking about Mike Pence doing anything grosses me out, though.
Well,
I mean, there's no
true.
Way to
just
really
his
win that
dumb
one.
Face.
I mean, his dumb face is dumb.
Yeah.
And we can't
true.
Do anything about that.
No, you
that's
can't.
Just
We're
his
stuck
face.
With it.
But this is a good time to get to know your new congressperson's phone number because you're
right.
probably going to be calling them a lot.
You're going to fucking need it.
there was already
We already need it. They just started today and you already need the
exactly.
damn phone numbers.
Oh yeah, people started calling at midnight last night basically.
Jesus.
First of all, there's already an ACLU sitting going on in Jeff Sessions' office.
As there should be.
As there should
by
be.
By the way.
The Alabama ACLU is on him. But also in a crazy curveball of an event that is also one of the stupidest strategic moves I could possibly imagine.
It's really epic in its
stupidity.
Failiness.
Stupidity. Yeah, in its failiness. A group of House Republicans tried to, like, go over Paul Ryan's head, essentially, and have a secret session in the middle of the night where they voted to change the House rules to gut the office of... Of all things. To gut the Office of Congressional Ethics.
Yes.
Which is an independent body that monitors ethics complaints in the House. Because after 2008 and the Abramoff scandal...
Right.
A bunch of lawmakers were found to be... lacking in the ethics department.
Right, exactly.
And there were a bunch of scandals, and some of those lawmakers ended up in jail.
And the reason why we have this independent body is because basically what happens is that the actual House Ethics Oversight Committee that's a part of the House doesn't do anything.
No, because it's all people who have conflicts of interest, essentially, because they don't want to limit their own activities.
Then nobody wants to be on that committee because basically you have to investigate your own members and then talk about how terrible they are.
Yeah, that makes it hard for everyone.
So you have to have this... independent thing, which is what they were trying to gut, which is basically the only thing that does any ethics oversight.
Yeah, because imagine you're at a lunch table with your friends in high school, and then you are forced to investigate your friend who's sitting next to you for cheating on their boyfriend or whatever.
Yeah.
But you also know that you would like the right to cheat on your boyfriend, so you're not going to investigate
gonna
your friend
anything.
And call them a
no.
crook for doing that.
No, you're just all complicit.
You're just going to all
cheating.
Be complicit and cheat together.
Right.
Like,
exactly.
That's what this is all about. So this is the only office that does independent monitoring of Congress.
Right.
And it was created out of need, but it was created by the Democrats. And so the Republicans thought, aha, we'll get rid of this secretly in the middle of the night and no one will find out. Except This is the most followed Congress in, like, modern history.
Yeah. We're watching, guys.
We're watching.
At least they know now,
well,
I guess.
I mean, like, how did they not know? They've probably been getting phone calls that have been blocking their phone lines for a month and a half now.
I mean, here's the thing. Like, which I can't believe they didn't figure out. And maybe they didn't realize they were being watched as heavily. And maybe they thought if they did it in the middle of the night that it would not be a thing. But, like, this, if you're a Democrat running in 2018 for the House,
you're immediately
this is it right here.
Like the first day and the first hour,
the first thing that this Congress decided to do is to get rid of ethics oversight.
Like
of all things
in a year where we're so worried.
I mean, get rid of Obamacare, for God's sake.
Right?
At least, like,
well,
there are at least some people claim that they're into that.
Right,
I mean, like.
Wait,
find me somebody who wants to get rid of ethics oversight.
Nobody. Including not enough Republicans, because part of the issue here was they didn't have enough Republicans to get
They didn't have their own leader.
They didn't have their own leader. And it was like
they didn't have their own president-elect.
And it was such a political minefield because, what was so weird about it was, so essentially this is just like a panel that has like a staff of nine and like five people or whatever, and they
basically breaking the bank. I'm sure. Probably.
Yeah. No, it's like a super cheap thing that Steve King came out and explained why they needed to get rid of it, which was that members of Congress were having to spend money to defend themselves against allegations of corruption.
Well,
I mean, that's part of the deal.
Right.
Like, if you're a public figure, like, it's better than no one ever having to defend themselves against charges of corruption because they are never charged with corruption and they are still corrupt.
And just because the Democrats started this doesn't mean that they haven't investigated Democrats.
No, they've investigated Democrats too.
Tons.
So I think they thought they could get bipartisan support for it because they could just do a sneaky little thing that no one really understands. The problem was that it made it into major media pretty quickly and suddenly, like, thousands of people were on the phones at, like, in the middle of the night. I started seeing this around midnight last night. I mean, around 9 p.m. last night, West Coast, which is midnight East Coast time.
Yeah. Well, Rachel Maddow picked it up, like, in her broadcast.
At that time. I mean, it was like they came down on them so fast. It was immediately all over Facebook. It went viral instantly. And so many people condemned it, including conservative ethics groups.
Right.
That Donald Trump ended up coming out against it, even though he would not come out against the idea of getting rid of this committee. He basically was like, this is the wrong time.
Right. They were against the timing of it.
They were against the timing. And he, of course, announces this on Twitter.
Sure.
Called the office unfair, but said turning attention to it was misplaced priorities. But then also hashtagged it DTS, which is his drain the swamp hashtag, which is so funny. But hilariously, disturbingly, despite the fact that almost everybody on earth called their congressman about it, and that's why this stopped, Trump got all the credit. This is going to be a theme on this podcast. Donald Trump just, like, existing in a world where other people make decisions and getting credit for those things. My mom had a conspiracy theory that I kind of liked, but I don't know if I agree with, which was this was sort of like a trial thing that they dropped to see how far they could push the ethics, the rolling back of ethics legislation.
Could be.
I don't think it was because it was so dumb.
Well, it was.
It was like too dumb.
Yeah.
Like, you really, as your first act in this new year, your plan was to get rid of ethics, an ethics monitoring body. Like, that.
I know.
That is so inept and crazy. The thing is also, it's not that I don't think these people don't want it. It's not that I don't think they have evil priorities. I think they absolutely do.
Sure.
I wasn't shocked that that members of Congress wanted to vote to get rid of their own oversight.
Me either.
I'm not insane. No. I was shocked by the stupidity of the strategy they displayed, though. Like, I'm worried that our ruling party right now is not just evil, but, like, fully inept.
Well, I think they might be.
And they didn't look as
inept. We know that the House Republicans are, because they have been in charge of the House for years
right,
now.
Right, can't get
and
a damn thing passed. All they can do is repeal Obamacare.
Right.
But, I mean, this is funny because this really is the first moment that we've seen what happens when you become the ruling party. Because they're great at blocking things. They're great defense players, for sure. I would never argue that the Republicans haven't learned how to play defense effectively.
Yeah, they've been doing it for 8 years.
If this is their best attempt at offense.
It's not great.
And the only other thing that really made press that they accomplished was that they levied fines for live streaming inside of Congress.
I know.
So, like, all they did was, like, try to limit free speech and then limit their own oversight, essentially. Their first day was just about, doing as many, like, unethical things as they could.
Exactly.
And failing at half of them.
Right. But we need to learn a lesson here, people, because, like, A, continue to be vigilant, and B, there is still something to be said for the will of the people, apparently.
Yeah.
Like, even if Donald Trump got the credit for this, which he shouldn't have, to be perfectly frank, yeah, that pisses me off a little bit because it's annoying. But, like, also, I sort of don't really care. Because what happened is that...
He looked real unpopular. Also, though... He looked weak if he didn't come out against this.
Well,
because
right, exactly.
This was not something he... If this had been something he had spearheaded, he would have never reversed his policy on it. But if this being a thing that was challenging his everyone's perception of him that he wasn't in control of gave him apparently free reign to have as many opinions on it as he wanted to have.
Right. But you know what?
Because just before he came out, Kellyanne Conway went on a Today Show and was like, no, he's not going to say anything about it, but we think it's important.
Right. But if he's the type of person who wants to ultimately just sort of like go along with the will of the people and say something that, I'm not saying that's what he did here, but I mean, I think that by the time that he tweeted that this morning, he sort of saw the writing on the wall.
Yeah,
like,
we just
all
that's we
have... all the more reason for us to continue doing what we're doing.
Of course.
Because
yeah, well, and also the way, obviously the way to get to him is to make him feel unpopular.
Right, exactly. And so that's why I say I don't care if he wants to take credit for every single thing that we do by calling our congresspeople, let him have it.
Yeah.
Because it's still enacting the change that we want to get done. So like I don't care if he takes credit for everything that like Joe Blow, you know, in the US who called their congressperson did. If he wants to get credit for that, God bless him. I don't care. Like, let's just keep doing it.
Yeah. I mean, let's live a little, you know?
Right.
Meanwhile, despite the embarrassing fiasco, somehow Paul Ryan easily won re-election as majority leader.
Yeah, sure.
I guess because who else do they have?
Yeah.
I mean, no one. The only one person voted against him, Thomas Massey from Kentucky. Mm-hmm. The caucus is slightly smaller because the Democrats gained 6 seats in the elections, but obviously that still gives them a huge majority because it's still 241 to 194. Despite, by the way, the 1 million vote deficit.
I know.
Like, literally 1 million more Democrats showed up to vote in that election, but somehow that's how the House seats break down.
Ah, gerrymandering.
Ah, man. But in any case, this is sort of interesting because the election of Donald Trump kind of undercut a bunch of hardliners who wanted to replace Paul Ryan. And so it's been a confusing time for the Republican Party because Ryan doesn't really like Trump, but the hardliners aren't really sure what to do now. Like, no one knows what their strategy is anymore. Massey cast his ballot for Daniel Webster, who's from Florida. I don't know what that... Sure. Like, to be the one guy, that seems...
I know, right?
That's bold. Republicans. You know? Nancy Pelosi also won her position back.
Yep.
Four defections, though, in her case.
Oh, my.
Two of them for Tim Ryan, who had sort of publicly stated that he was running against her.
Yep.
Those from Jim Cooper and Kathleen Rice. It's important that we know their names because, hilariously, Ron Kind from Wisconsin voted for Jim Cooper, who voted for Tim Ryan.
Oh, my.
So there's like a whole chain
of confusing
votes. And then Kristen Sinema voted for John Lewis. She's got the right plans.
Why not?
But it also, I just noticed, even though this was old news, how crazy it would have been if Tim Ryan actually did become
Speaker
the minority
Ryan
leader.
And Leader Ryan.
Because
yikes.
That's chaos.
Yeah.
Two Ryans. I mean, nobody wants that.
Yeah.
But as we said, the one effective thing that they did accomplish today was that they decided to levy fines for live streaming from the House floor so that nobody can hold sit-ins and live stream them anymore.
Sure.
Once you turn off the C-SPAN cameras and shut the session down, no one can do anything. And we can't know what's happening in our own government in a building that we the people own.
Well, we've got enough rich congresspeople that...
Yeah, the fine is $2,500.
Yeah, just turn on your phone and then pony up.
Like,
I mean, that's
again, Bernie
do.
Sanders is the poorest senator.
Or you fundraise for $2,500 to pay
and, like,
the fine.
After seven seconds, you have it.
It's done. Yeah, exactly.
But John Lewis said, I'm not afraid. I've been fined before. Many of us have been fined before.
Yeah. John Lewis has been more than fined before.
Exactly.
So
he's not afraid of
$2,500
fine
to get him to stop.
The vote, obviously, along party lines.
Mm. Shocker.
Limiting free speech. Very partisan issue.
Yes.
But so in any case, we thought we would talk a little bit about the latest on Trump's cabinet. And some of these are people that we already knew about before we left for break. But we're just...
We got to break it down for you.
Reiterating. Some of them are people we haven't highlighted before.
Yeah, exactly.
Most of them are nutzos. Most of them have been critical of China. That's mostly how they've gotten the job.
Sure.
Also, those people are mixed
Many
in with some
of... Many of them are racists.
A lot of racists in there. They're mixed in with
people who have no knowledge of the job that they're about to hold.
People have no knowledge of the job they're hold. People who were in the Bush administration and architects of failed policy.
Sure.
And Mitch McConnell's wife. So an exciting display of Republican glory.
Yeah, incompetence.
Yeah, we have a new special advisor on regulatory reform, Carl Icahn, or Icahn?
I think it's Icahn.
It's Icahn, right? Who's an investor and a billionaire.
Sure,
he's a corporate raider, basically.
Oh, yeah.
He just, you know, buys large stakes in companies and then forces policy changes to benefit shareholders. And he basically is in charge of the position that will get rid of corporate regulations.
Yep.
And I'm pretty sure this position does not require Senate confirmation, so he's just a guy with a job. Great. Same for the Homeland Security Advisor, who was a top security aide for doofus W.
Yep.
He runs a consulting firm.
He's
just sort of like your typical Beltway guy.
Yeah.
But he also doesn't require, as I said, Senate confirmation. So we just have one of the architects of Bush's horrifying foreign policy back in good standing.
Wasn't Trump running against that foreign policy, by the way?
Pretty sure he was.
I'm pretty sure he was, too. Yeah.
Rick Perry for the Energy Department. This a man who wanted to get rid of the EPA.
Yes, this, I think, isn't this famously the department that he forgot?
Wasn't this the third department? Forgot. Yeah.
Yeah. This was the oops department. Oh, yeah. He's now running that.
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah, right. The energy. Yeah. He wanted to. The three that he remembered included the EPA, I think. Or the two that he remembered included the EPA.
Environmental protection.
No, I know. He wanted to get rid of energy and the EPA.
I think that he forgot.
Because I just said EPA.
Right.
And
so that's how important it is to Rick Perry.
Yeah, exactly.
couldn't remember it.
Couldn't remember it, neither could I.
Yeah. Also, the last couple people who have run the energy department have been like, you know, astrophysicists or something. That's probably not the right type of scientist. But it was a science person.
A fancy scientist.
It was not a person who had been on Dancing with the Stars.
No. Certainly not. Despite his metrosexual makeover, Rick Perry is still very much a dumb person.
Yeah.
Robert Lighthizer? Is it Lighthizer?
Yes. Oh, yeah. So it's Robert Lighthizer. So there was word that it was going to be this
Reagan guy.
He was a Reagan guy. He's also very in favor of trade. So that's a curious choice to run the
US trade rep. But he hates China.
Yeah. But also when the... it's Robert Lighthizer. And when Trump announced it... So there were rumors of this last night, and then it got announced officially. And when they tweeted the announcement, they said it was Robert Lighter. And spell his name right. So they had to read.
It's hard with Twitter. Autocorrect will get you every time.
Yeah.
So we also have for Transportation Secretary Elaine Chao, who again is Mitch McConnell's wife.
Yes.
She's like a big insider in Washington.
Yeah,
she is.
She
was the labor secretary for W, which is why she's so qualified to be the Transportation Secretary.
Yeah, sure.
Now, because of her expertise in all of those areas, clearly.
It's weird that a person is married to Mitch McConnell, isn't it?
Right? Like any person.
Yeah.
I know. Like, do they share a home?
I don't know. A bed?
A bed? A life in any
regard? All right, next.
And then for CIA, Mike Pompeo, the Benghazi conspiracy theorist.
He's as nutty as they come. He's like the type of person that, like, when you listen to him, like, I heard when this got announced, they were, like, playing a bunch of clips for him. He's like the type of guy who's like, there are signs written in Arabic on the Mexican border telling ISIS members where to cross into the U.S., all of which is like bonkers, wacko, made up things.
Like, not true.
But this is a person who is running our intelligence agency.
Yeah,
who
so that's pretty special.
Is like, you know,
less than intelligent.
Less than intelligent.
Yeah.
Beyond.
And also less than fact knowing.
That is almost more concerning. Right. I would almost be okay if he was just
a stupid person who believes facts or knows any facts.
Right.
We're still awaiting to hear about Veterans Affairs. We're still awaiting to hear about housing. Mm-hmm. We're still awaiting to hear about Director of National Intelligence. I mean, some of the names that are floating around for these offices are hilarious. Like Sarah Palin, I think, for Veterans Affairs is one. Like some of these people, if you were thinking that they're awaiting those announcements to find more qualified people, that's not what they're waiting for.
No.
They're waiting to find the least qualified people. And sometimes that's harder to do because it's Washington and everyone is medium qualified to run Housing and Veterans Affairs, but no one is uniquely unqualified. You know?
Yeah, except Sarah Palin.
Except Sarah Palin. And that's what they're looking for.
She'd be a great choice.
Yeah, they're looking for someone who's uniquely unqualified.
In the world that we currently live in.
Exactly. And then you probably also heard through both major media and your conservative rag that Donald Trump single-handedly saved 700 jobs for Ford.
Oh, he's just creating thousands of jobs every day
by just sort of like casually existing as a presence.
That's right.
It's so crazy because when I read the story initially in the New York Times, and then I read a story in, I think it was... like USA Today or something. Like I read some other like sort of middle of the road nonsense, like simplified news report.
Yeah.
And it was like the time that I read two articles in two similarly sort of like medium unbiased reports about the Obama-Russia hacking press conference.
Yes.
Where one of them said he'd been really tough on Russia and one said he'd been really weak on Russia. And it was both news sources that don't have a reason
like
to really
Washington
spin it.
It was like the
Washington Post and the New York Times or something like that.
Exactly.
Like it was some, or even if it was USA Today, like they generally don't have much of a slant in USA Today. They just lack facts for the most part. So this was a similar situation where when I first read about this in the New York Times, they basically praised Trump for bringing this deal about through ways that I can't quite identify because they were completely indirect.
No, they had nothing basically, to do with him.
They were sort of positing that because Trump had been criticizing Ford on the campaign trail for expanding production in Mexico, and then they made an announcement that they were canceling a plan to build a new factory in Mexico, that somehow Trump had caused that announcement, when in reality, they had just looked at the economic indicators and decided not to build a plant in Mexico.
Right.
So he's, you know, and Trump has been attacking a lot of big companies. He's attacked Carrier, as we know, GM, right. even though their CEO is on his financial advisory board,
sure.
which is curious. But he came in with GM after the Ford thing happened so that he would look like he was tough on everyone.
Yeah.
But, you know, Boeing, Lockheed Martin, like, we've been hearing this sort of, like, these weird spurts from Twitter that have been criticizing big companies for things he's imagining that they're doing. And I did not imagine myself coming in again to the defense of these companies, but Ford went through great pains to make it clear that Donald Trump was not behind this choice. And that is because Donald Trump somehow passively got credit for it. It was so weird.
Yeah.
Like, according to media, it was just like, case closed, 700 right. jobs in America Trump. Saved by Donald Trump.
Yes.
Here's what really happened. Ford was going to cancel building a $1.6 billion factory in Mexico. They realized that they could use an existing factory in Mexico for what they were planning to do with Mexico, in Mexico.
Right.
And then that
just
they
with a little bit more money.
Yeah, no, like not even because they were using an existing plant.
Oh, I thought and they still had to invest a little bit of
They had to invest a little bit of money, but right. not $1.6 billion.
Right, right, exactly. Yes.
Meanwhile,
they
were going to invest $700 million, which, again, is less than half of $1.6 billion in an American plant that would build big cars that are sold to Americans.
Right. So they just realized that this whole $1.6 billion plan
was twice as much as they needed to spend.
Right, exactly.
Because,
and it wasn't because Trump was a hard ass on the campaign trail. It was because somebody who could do math
Working for Ford and told them a way to save money. And they thought, okay, we'll try it.
We'll
We're
do
a
that.
Company whose goal is to make money.
Yeah.
Like, the whole idea that Donald Trump somehow, like, wheeled and dealed to save these jobs is so hilarious.
Right.
The reason it sort of, the reason this position kind of came to be repeated so widely was that in the press conference, Mark Fields, who's the CEO, said that the company was optimistic about Trump's economic policies, because
sure.
they would be, because they're a giant corporation, and he's
yes.
going to cut their taxes
right.
and also
taxes,
get rid
right.
of worker protections and all
right.
the things that make it cheaper to be Ford.
Right.
So, like, and that's gross reasoning, of course, because basically they're just, like, saying, well, we can stay because now we can exploit taxpayers here instead of in Mexico.
Right.
Like, so, whatever. But before the press conference, he was also on Fox Business and basically was like, no, there's less demand for small cars in North America. So it's not because we were, like, somehow, you know,
scared
but, or right. Donald Trump like called us or anything. We didn't have anything to do with Donald
right.
Trump. We made the decision because
right.
we were going to manufacture more small cars than we
right.
needed.
Well, and also if Ford learned anything from Carrier, it's that they would have been smarter to say that they were moving to Mexico and then
they
to call up Trump and be like, what kind of tax breaks can we get
exactly.
from you?
I know.
So like, obviously it didn't have anything to do with Trump, because if it had anything to do with
they
Trump,
they could have blackmailed
him. They could, exactly. That's exactly right.
Either way, UAW was happy. The auto workers
I'm
union,
sure
which
were,
I'm
which
sure they
great.
Were.
Right. I'm
because,
sure that probably
you know,
pissed Trump off, but
exactly.
I mean, you know, whatever.
But so basically, but also what's interesting is that they're going to use this plant in Michigan to build gas electric hybrid vehicles for F-150 pickup
that
trucks.
That also probably pisses
so that
them
probably
off.
Pisses them off. But also it means that these jobs are not immediate jobs.
No, yeah.
They're like coming in the next 5 years or
sure.
something. Like they're not,
yeah.
it's not like we got jobs for tomorrow
yeah.
for some hardworking Americans.
Right.
Like, and these jobs, like this, I think that all of his environmental policy will be destructive, but that it is going to be very hard to sort of unravel the train that is renewable energy and environmentally friendly, like, you
well,
know.
There's a want for it.
Just there's a want for it. And also, a lot of companies are already heavily invested in it.
Right.
Energy companies are heavily invested in it because
yeah.
they saw where the writing on the wall was.
Well, there
Car
are a lot of requirements
are
that are
in
place that these companies have been having to work toward
exactly.
anyway that were
so
put in place years ago.
They've made the investments
right,
already.
Exactly,
so what,
yeah.
do they want to unravel all of that so
no.
that, like, it doesn't
That's
make,
a waste of their money.
That's a waste of their money. It doesn't
right.
make any sense. It's time to start producing hybrid vehicles.
Right.
People will buy those. Prius,
correct.
If we've seen anything in California, when
Good
if
God.
You have a Prius, you can't even go to a grocery store because you'll never find your car again. Like,
right.
I mean, there's now demand for these things. There's now, you know, like, there's
yeah.
a whole market created
yeah.
for environmentally friendly stuff. So whatever.
Yeah.
That's a side point that I wanted to make. And this plant also makes Mustangs and Lincoln Continentals, so they're up to gas guzzling
sure.
their fair share.
Yeah.
But basically, they decided that they would make the cars that they were going to make at the new plant in Mexico at an existing plant. Which, by the way, those cars are currently made in Wayne, Michigan, so they're still moving production.
Oh, sure.
They claim that no jobs are going to be lost. I don't know if I see how that's possible, but
yeah.
what am I going to say? To be fair, Trump did slam them for doing that. He's consistent
well,
in some ways. Sure. Not in most ways, I guess. Yeah, I guess. But in any case, basically, after this all kind of like came to a head and everyone realized that Trump had nothing to do with it because Ford came out and tried their very hardest to make that clear, he just started slamming GM. So he needed somewhere to turn his rage, you know?
Right, yes.
So it's sort of curious. I wonder what Mary Barra is going to do with all of this rage that she now is going to have to advise. Right. It's going to be interesting.
I know.
Meanwhile, let's talk a little bit about the Senate and the Democrats.
Ugh.
Because we have sort of like an interesting situation shaping up here. It could be Lincoln's team of rivals, or it could be House GOP circa any year in the last 10 years.
I know. Yeah.
It's kind of like we could either go the sort of Boehner's GOP route, or we could go the Lincoln route. And I just don't see how we're going to go the Lincoln route.
Yeah.
Basically, this is the first day of Schumer's tenure as Senate majority leader, or minority leader. They've been working on this transition for a while. He's been number two for a long time, so whatever. But the biggest shift so far is that Harry Reid very much sort of like governed by like a secret cabal of four people that like unilaterally made decisions, and then he just sort of iron fisted his way through it. And I'm not for that.
No.
So
that was a big knock on Harry Reid.
It wasn't really working.
Right.
On top of everything else, but Schumer sort of has like almost the opposite problem.
Yeah.
Which is that Schumer wants to make deals with everyone.
Right. Well, and we talked about how they were expanding the leadership a long time ago on this podcast, and we told you that they were expanding it to basically all of their members.
Yeah. There's like 1,000 people in leadership now. There's 10 leadership positions and 13 sort of a larger leadership caucus that's going to meet.
That's like
so they're going to have meetings
like a fourth of the caucus. Yeah, it's more than a fourth.
Yeah. They're going to have a meeting where all of the caucus essentially is there to make leadership positions. Yeah. Now, on the one hand, that ensures representation for the people on the far left that I want to see represented. You know, Bernie Sanders is in it. Liz Warren is in it.
It ensures representation for everyone.
Literally everyone. It also means, though, that like Joe Manchin has a seat at the table.
Yeah,
and he's someone
not great.
That often holds the Democratic caucus hostage.
Right. He's a person who was thinking about party switching, depending on
exactly.
how this election went.
So I mean, this is not someone that you necessarily want to have to bargain with. That's bargaining with your captors. So in any case, he's been sort of like trying to accommodate everyone, but he's especially sort of willing to reach out to the moderate wing because that's, I think, where he's most comfortable.
Of course. Yeah.
And
well, that makes
so,
the most sense for him.
You know, he wants to reach out to every wing and then take credit for everything. But I sort of see that he thinks like, oh, well, we'll just have everyone there. And then my position in the middle
will
seem
big,
so
happy family.
Reasonable. But it's going to be hard because he doesn't really have a defense bone in his body.
Yeah.
He's a deal maker.
Yeah.
And he has already said he's willing to work with Trump where he needs to work with Trump. And
he's not going to be a great resistance leader.
No, I get why Bernie Sanders said that, because Bernie Sanders was sort of reflecting the same working class rage, and there were issues that he wanted to make Trump stick to.
Right.
That's not why Chuck Schumer says that, though.
It's not.
He says that because he's going to sell us out.
Right.
That's the Chuck Schumer way.
Yeah.
So in
any
case,
find a camera and sell us out.
Exactly. And you know, he's already made clear he's not interested in obstructionism to begin with. And I worry that because he signaled that and that he's willing to play ball with Trump, that he's going to go out of his way to seek deals with the GOP.
I agree.
That's going to be very dangerous for us because he's already far to the right of where most of the party is at the moment.
Right. Well, and especially...
especially on foreign policy, by the way.
Right. Well, and considering
he's a huge Israel hawk.
What I feel like we learned as a party in this election. I mean, he is certainly not the person to be leading that party.
No. He's literally someone who in 2013 said they should clear the field for Hillary Clinton.
Right.
That's who we're dealing with.
Yeah.
We're dealing with someone very mired in an old way of doing things that does not understand what's coming around the bend.
Yeah.
So in any case, everyone's going to be in charge now.
Let's see how it goes.
On the Senate side. So I feel like on the one hand, I think that the sort of inclusive party structure will give everyone a chance to do what they're good at, which is maybe a good thing.
I do think if faced with two options, this option
is better
or the
than
previous
the Harry
option,
Reid option.
This option is better. I don't know that it's the best answer, but if you only have two options, it's the better that you don't only have
right.
two options.
Right, that's the thing about things. But he had to defuse. There was some tension between Dick Durbin and Patty Murray. They were
both wanted the number two.
They both wanted to be the whip, and so
so now they both are the number two. But he technically is, but like she has the title of the number two. It doesn't make
any
sense.
They made
guys.
Some weird deal where he's going to be sort of like the actual whip, and she'll be like a backroom operator,
right?
Where she like goes and gets the vote secretly, and then Dick Durbin like does it in full view, gets all the glory probably. I also wish Debbie Stabenow is his number four, and I have never heard a word about her.
Sure.
Like, she's like a non-entity as far as I'm concerned. Right. So I'm worried about that.
She's been
that.
Around for a while, though.
She's been around for a long time. Yes. I mean, I've heard of her. Right, of course. But, like, I've never heard a word about a thing she's done. And she's in charge of the communications center, so I'm a little worried about that.
That's not great.
So this is, like, sort of their messaging and policy arm, which, again, I couldn't even tell you where she stands on policy or messaging.
Right.
Because all I've heard about her is her existence as a human being.
Right. At least Sanders is doing outreach. That makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. It also makes me worried, though, that they sort of, like, gave him an external role so that they wouldn't have to give him an internal role to a degree.
That's true.
Because if you're in charge of outreach, you're in charge of messaging their dumb ideas to other people instead of telling them that their ideas are dumb, which is what...
Well, he should just message his own ideas.
I mean, he'll do that anyway. Exactly. I mean, he's going to. He only messages one kind of ideas.
I know.
So it's fine. And I mean, that was sort of similar to what they did with Liz Warren last time. That was when they first expanded the leadership. It was Liz Warren that was going to be part of the messaging. Good news, there are 5 women in his leadership circle of 10, which means that 5 women and 5 men will be in the Democratic leadership cabal that is now everyone.
Right.
Which is a good thing for women.
That's great.
But also Joe Manchin is in it, so that's a bad thing for women and people.
And
And he's been already holding everyone hostage. He tried to shut down the government over a bunch of coal workers recently.
Oh, that's right.
And
he did,
Schumer sort of did a he did some classic Schuming where he kind of joined Manchin in front of the cameras to protest this, but agreed sort of privately that he was never going to take it actually to a shutdown. And so everyone knew it was all just like a show.
Yeah.
And so he ended up opposing the bill, but it cleared a filibuster with just a vote to spare. So he kind of like negotiated it so that he would look good in the vote, and then it was actually going to pass anyway. Like,
oh boy.
I mean,
what a world.
What a world. meanwhile,
John McCain, Lindsey Graham continuing to do the
work. Work of the Cold War people. I mean, not that I'm not for this, because I don't want to make it sound
I know. Yeah.
I'm just sort of like curious how like, it's like they're hoeing their own road at this point.
I was going to say, look, they're the two to do it.
Yeah.
No one understands this better than they do.
They remember the Cold War.
Right.
So
they are the only two who are continuing to be obsessed with the Russian hacking of our election.
Exactly. And I say go forth and obsess.
Yes.
And they're joined by Chuck Schumer and Jack Reed, who's from Rhode Island, who's a senator from Rhode Island, because the 4 of them wanted to get a new panel to investigate the cyber threats from Russia and their activity in the race. Obviously, the Republicans don't have a great incentive to get on board with this,
even though
Graham and McCain are Republicans.
And certainly Donald Trump doesn't. And Donald Trump, nor his people, will even say that it was Russia.
Exactly.
Yet. I mean...
And meanwhile, Hillary Clinton will only say that it's Russia, so nobody's taking blame for any of the things that they did in this point. But so, you know, and McCain is the head of the Armed Services Committee, and the Senate Foreign Relations Committee and the Senate Intelligence Committee are also... All 3 of those committees are pursuing probes into the hacking. So basically, they wanted a sort of independent body that would... stop 3 committees from having to independently investigate.
I feel like I only want them to keep investigating this if there's like a contingency that like Hillary Clinton has to say that she fucked up.
I know. Right. I refuse to let the Democrats in 2020 be like, well, it wasn't our fault last time, so let's not change anything.
No, I can't do
that. Because I can't take that. But so in any case, McCain and Graham could not get McConnell on board, so they're backing off. And instead, all of the Democrats in those committees are meeting to sort of see if they can crowdsource information a little bit and make sure that they're coordinated, whatever that means.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, they still have Cory Gardner, who's a Republican from Colorado, is still pursuing this independent committee. So they still have a few advocates in the Senate who are just sort of like independently on this track.
Yeah.
But it sort of looks like, as is to be expected, no adequate investigation of this will ever happen. And instead, we will just have to sit and wonder.
Yeah.
And Hillary Clinton will continue to have to be able to say that it was Russia. And Donald Trump will be able to say it wasn't Russia and we'll never address it ever.
Yeah.
Or it'll get mired in some sort of crazy Benghazi-like conspiracy thing that is all done for political reasons and has no conclusions. I mean, if they waste their time with that, at least they're not doing anything.
Right.
But here in this week of terrible news is something happy to think about.
Yeah, this is great.
I have wanted for a long time to have a larger conversation on this podcast about, and I guess I do sometimes from time to time, but about the larger impact of allowing... the democratic process in the primaries to happen organically. And because there I think that one of the reasons people get so nuts about the primaries is they have a very short-sighted sense of what the primaries are for. The primaries are sort of our only chance to allow ideas to organically sort of like make their way to the top.
Right.
So they have
within our own party.
Within our own party. Right. So they have impacts that are much wider than just who becomes the president.
Right.
Or who becomes our candidate.
Correct.
And one of the reasons you want to allow for a sort of wider discussion about some ideas that maybe we don't talk about all the time.
So we can decide what ideas we think are good ideas, and then we can do them.
Exactly. Because here's the thing. Maybe Hillary Clinton, like, won a bunch of states based partially on people preferring her ideas. Maybe she won a bunch of states based partially on the fact that no one knew who the hell Bernie Sanders was.
Right.
Whatever it is. She also was forced to talk about...
I think she won more based on nobody knowing who Bernie Sanders was than people who liked her ideas. But
correct.
That's
our opinion. But I mean, the point is that she was forced to adapt to these ideas. And that because of that, people in her own circle were also sort of forced to.
That's true.
So now we have a situation...
Right. Without this primary, Andrew Cuomo would not have known that
he needed to introduce legislation to give free college education to people in New York State.
Yep.
But you know who was there with him to help him introduce it? Bernie Sanders.
That's right.
Because Bernie Sanders was the genesis of this idea.
That's right.
So Cuomo, and this is a plan that is actually closer to Clinton's plan, which is not surprising because Cuomo himself is very moderate and Cuomo is in Clinton's circle.
But Sanders and Clinton supposedly worked on that plan together.
Yeah,
it's not Bernie Sanders' plan, but they came up to after she won the primary.
This was a plan that he helped her come up with.
Correct.
Where essentially, if they couldn't get a free college education for
everyone,
they were going to provide a free public college education for people who didn't make enough money to pay for the public education. So essentially, Cuomo's plan, which I think is the same as Clinton's plan, would provide free educations for students whose families earn less than $125,000 a year.
Yeah, it was.
And those people would pay nothing for tuition at 2- and 4-year public colleges in New York State.
Yeah.
Now, Cuomo is actually pretty adept at like attaching himself to trendy policy items like this,
because
he's otherwise like a complete asshole.
Sure.
But he's he did the same thing with fracking. Suddenly there was a moratorium on fracking. Cuomo was in bed with the fracking industry before
of course.
But
he almost lost a primary.
But he almost lost a primary to Zephyr Teachout over that issue, and he was like, "Oh, wait a minute, this is how you get elected."
Right.
This kind of worries me that he maybe is going to try to run for a third term, and my parents are both very adamant that he will not win a third term, that's very frowned upon in New York. That doesn't happen much.
Oh, interesting.
The third term thing. People are pretty devoted to their term limits. Like, Bloomberg
finagles
that third term. I don't know. I mean, it's hard for a New York governor who is, like, vintage New York and not,
we can have a New York off.
Yeah, that's true.
2020.
I mean, I say that, and Donald Trump just became the president. But, I mean, that was sort of a different situation. It's hard for the political establishment of the New York, who are not carpetbagger New York, but like New York, New York, to run. That just, for some reason, that doesn't rub people the right way. But, I mean, it may be that that's his goal. I hope that's his goal and not that he'll run for governor again.
Remember, there were a lot of people talking about whether he would in 2016, and it was really only sort of just like the fact that Hillary was going to run that he probably wouldn't.
I feel
because
like,
a lot of people think that this is his angle.
But. Yeah, I mean, I think it is sort of his ultimate goal. I feel like the New York State Legislature is such a shit show that he'll have a few policy issues to stand on, but actually his record will be pretty bad.
I don't think
he's
not going to be who the primary voters in 2020
he's another Clinton.
Looking for either.
He's another Clinton.
Exactly. Yeah,
so,
that's not what anybody
But
wants.
In any case, another Clinton is proposing a plan to give free college education to people. That has not happened in the history of other Clintons.
Right.
So this is a pretty big deal, and this is directly related to the fact that
we had a
robust
primary
process.
Yes.
Anyone who tells me that you shouldn't primary people because it brings up contradictions and brings up ideas that they, you know, like, that's nuts. There is so much more to policy than just the election you're trying to win.
Yes.
There is the long game. There is the wide game. There is the game where states start to adapt policies that were brought up at the national level that couldn't survive there but could survive at the state level.
Yep.
Colorado it didn't pass, but they tried to vote on having a single-payer healthcare system. Why?
Yep.
Because they have a ton of money from legalized marijuana, which is another thing that didn't work at the national level, but they were able to show that it was a thing that made everyone lots of money, and now four other states or five other states have it.
Yep.
You know, I mean, these are things that are part of the sort of larger political discussion. So it's never worth shutting down the primary process because Andrew Cuomo learned where his voters were on this.
Also, think of all of the excitement and all of the people who we've got now excited to run for public office and everybody's always talking about how the Democratic bench isn't very deep. I mean,
we're going to have a bench soon.
We're going to have it deeper because of this primary that we just had. So it's ridiculous to say.
No, but I mean, I think it's sort of exciting to see, because this is what I was hoping would happen, is that states would pick up some of these policy pieces in places that, actually I heard an interesting theory from my dad who heard it from someone else whatever, that was basically like, at this point, blue states should just be like, cut our taxes. And we'll take the money. Because all our tax money just, it, most of it goes to other states.
Totally.
And if those states don't want our money, then that's fine. At this point, I'm sort of done with them. Like, right. If they're going to be idiots and they don't want our money, they're literally blackmailing us. They're telling us we can't have our rights that we want, but they're going to take our money.
They're going to take all of our money.
Yeah. Like, if they don't want our money, that's fine with me. We can have whatever tax rates we want in this state.
We can
have all these things. We have plenty of money. Yeah, I mean, like, we can have everything we want. We could have free college education in this state. We could literally raise taxes like a quarter of what the federal tax cuts are and probably have all of these things.
Yeah, probably.
Like, we don't even need to pay the same amount in taxes. No. So, like, cut our taxes.
And you know what? We would vote in favor of it.
Absolutely. Anyway. Yeah. You know, in California, we would just be like, oh, a tax increase? Absolutely. Let's do it. A tax increase to save puppies from being lost at sea? I'll do it. Like, we'll vote for any tax increase.
Yeah.
So, like, this is like, I'm excited to see New York State do this because I was worried about Cuomo not taking the lead because of Clinton's do-nothingism.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he's part of her camp. And I was worried about de Blasio, the same thing, because he's part of her camp.
Yeah.
And both of them, I think, have been fairly sort of, like, active. I knew Jerry Brown would be out there.
Yeah.
Because Jerry Brown has nothing to lose.
At least de Blasio, before he re-got behind Clinton, was sort of out there in favor of a lot of these things.
Well, right.
Anyway.
Exactly. De Blasio has always been to her left.
Right.
It's just that he's also part of her circle.
Right, exactly.
So, and, you know, he worked on her Senate campaigns.
Yeah.
So he wasn't really in a position to break with her on the presidential level. But I'm happy to see someone like Cuomo, who's very much in that new Democratic realm, kind of pull something like this and pull Bernie Sanders in to make it popular.
Yeah.
It's fun that they recognize that Bernie Sanders makes stuff popular in their states.
I know.
And I love that Bernie Sanders is just getting involved in a bunch of state-level shit in other states.
Bernie Sanders is the closest person that we have to, like, a resistance leader right
now. Yeah. No, exactly. And it's interesting to see so many establishment Democrats need him the way that they're needing him.
Yeah.
Because he's not even in the party anymore.
I know. He left after immediately. The primary. Yeah.
But he's taking his responsibility as a member of our caucus very seriously.
He is. Yes.
So, I mean, I sort of don't fault him for that.
Right.
You know, I mean, that was part of his beef was with the Democratic Party in Vermont. And
so he's not
going to join their party because he's like, fuck you guys. You tried to you wouldn't support me.
And he doesn't need them to continue to win re-election.
No, exactly. So he can just deal with what he deals with.
Yeah.
But it's sort of fun to see like the Cuomos of the world pull him in to propose like free college education.
I mean,
I don't know what its prospects are pretty uncertain because the state legislature in New York is a mess. But if this is modeled by this state, it can be modeled by other states. We could decide to do it in California. We have a slightly more functional legislature here.
Yeah.
Thanks to Jerry Brown. I don't know how long it will last because he's about to leave office.
Well, we've got super majorities in
But we have super majorities
Congress,
in every house or in every chamber. So I'm sort of like interested to see where these state level politics go because I think that it will be incumbent upon governors to make it clear that they don't stand, you know, they stand in opposition to this kind of politics. And the path that's been laid out for them in these super blue states is a Sanders path. It is not a Clinton path.
Right.
So that's exciting. Meanwhile, this week in selling out, this year in selling out.
Megyn Kelly.
Heading to the real news.
NBC is going to the Peacock. She's going to Peacock.
I want to remind everyone that when she joined Fox, she was engaged in such important reporting as making sure everyone knew about the dangers of the new Black Panther Party, which is a fringe group that one's heard of, and insisting that Santa Claus and Jesus were white.
This is the thing that people often forget about Megyn Kelly now that she sort of like has, you know, a little bit of mysterious legitimacy.
Well, she decided to question a few people on some glaring idiocies, you know?
Exactly.
And that was enough, apparently.
But she totally got her start on the backs, or on the back of some, you know, pretty open racism.
Yeah. But she, as she moved to the center, her audience got bigger. So,
that's,
you know,
curious.
What are you going to do?
Especially Fox News. It seems like they would do the opposite.
She'd been there for 12 years.
Yeah.
And she had moderated debates at this point and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I'm sort of interested to see. This is something I worry about in mainstream media because my mom always complains about this with NPR. Where she's always like, when Republican administrations come in, they hire a bunch of Republican commentators and they get real conservative for a while. And I'm sort of worried that this is a sign that NBC is sort of like, well, apparently this is where people are. So we'll bring Megyn Kelly and they can argue about the whiteness of Santa Claus on NBC instead of on a fringe channel. Like, so I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
You know, we want a piece of her audience of crazy people.
Right.
But hopefully it also sort of, the sort of less conspiracy theory-ish version of this that I could imagine is it brings a bunch of conspiracy theorists into the real news fold.
That's
true. So I'm hoping that's what happens.
Right? Yeah, maybe these people will start watching her and then
find themselves watching NBC, which is at least not as terrible as
exactly.
Fox.
Accidentally watch Rachel Maddow one night.
Yeah, I mean, anything could happen.
Right.
There's so many options once you're in the NBC family.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, in terms of other sellouts, W will attend the inauguration, and Bill and Hillary will attend the inauguration. I get why W is attending, because what is he so busy with?
And like you said, and you sort of like Bill's even attending. Right, exactly. I get why Hillary claims she would want to go, but I'm also still pissed that she's going.
Yeah, I don't think
because
she should.
I don't think this is just like her.
This is the most Hillary totally Clinton move that there ever was.
Absolutely, but don't campaign for a year and a half on how dangerous a person is, like literally to like the existence of our nation.
Yeah,
and then just go and hobnob at the
inauguration.
Like that's what this is. That's what an inauguration is. Mm-hmm. It's a party for the new president.
Yeah,
and like fuck him and fuck you for going. Excuse my language. Like,
don't
I just
excuse your language.
Yeah, right.
We're an independent podcast. We can say fuck if we
I
want.
I was gonna say
only my mom will get.
I was gonna say sorry, Carla. Right. Everybody else.
Deal.
Fuck it. But yeah, I just like, and I also realized that like she now sort of claims that she is, you know, she's out of politics, which thank God. But I mean, like, she's not, and I have also, to be perfectly honest, been a little upset that she has been totally absent from the discussion.
Totally.
And like, while I don't want her in the discussion because I don't feel like she really has a place in it any longer, I also feel like as a person who just won 3 million more votes than the person who is about to be the president, you have just as much legitimacy as they do. And if you truly think this person is a danger to our country,
then don't legitimize their fucking rule.
Then don't go to the inauguration, and also be out there. As a voice against him.
Totally.
The idea that
her only role here is to create a peaceful transfer of power. Like,
no,
we're
screw
not the
that.
Party with the guns. And also, we're not the overthrow of government party. We're a party that believes very strongly in the rule of law and the place of government. So it's not like the Republicans saying that, because they don't believe in the government.
They don't believe in government.
So
right, exactly.
For them to say that is like an actual, it's to encourage treason, essentially. That's not what the Democratic platform is, and that's not what the Democratic majority is for.
Right.
So she doesn't have to pretend like the things he is saying that are resolutely anti-democratic are acceptable.
Right.
And she also can give us permission to resist them.
Yep.
But she hasn't done any of that.
No,
she
hasn't.
She's spent all of these months, she's either disappeared or basically been like the peaceful transfer of power is what's
or
most
hanging
important.
Out with rich people talking about Russia.
Exactly. Like, she hasn't in any way demonstrated that she would have or can be an effective leader in a crisis.
No.
Which is what this
because
is.
Because we're in one right now.
This is a crisis. And she's like, well, I guess I'll just go and make sure everyone knows that we have to accept
right.
lay down and accept it.
Yeah.
Like, that's not...
No.
That's not the moment that we're in right now.
No.
And the fact that she so clearly doesn't understand that.
Well, go figure. Another moment that she doesn't understand.
Worries. I mean, says everything it needs to about why we couldn't support her.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, if you thought 2017 was going to be free of immediate terrorism, you're wrong. We had terrorism at the stroke of midnight.
You were a damn fool, is what you
fool,
were.
Yeah. I mean. There was a shooting at a nightclub in Istanbul that left 39 dead and lots of people wounded.
God.
ISIS claimed responsibility, and no one's really sure if they just claimed responsibility or actually responsible, as is usually the case in these situations.
Yep.
But it was a fairly bloody attack, and... They claimed it was a revenge for the Turkish military's involvement in Syria. There's also some people some scholars, I guess, that are sort of claiming that this nightclub in particular was like a sort of symbolic Western influence. So like that there's some chance, there's a chance that Turkish people committed the attack
and
ISIS is either along for the ride or it's Turkish sort of affiliates with ISIS or something. So no one's really sure what happened.
Yeah.
But Turkey's been having terror issues for months now.
Yeah, they have.
And a lot of 40 people have already died. A lot of them were police officers, actually. Because there were two bombings in Istanbul 3 weeks ago, which was Kurds. It's like a mess over there right now. And Erdogan's an asshole. So like no one's leading them through this.
No.
It's a mess. Also, we were going to talk about 2016, but we're not going to list for you every single person that died in 2016.
You know, it's a long list.
Because it's too long.
It's a terrible
list. A boring list because it's depressing.
It's depressing.
I'm calling all depressing things boring from now on. I have no interest in the depressing.
Yeah.
I only can watch really happy movies and TV shows and then read books about why things have happened the way they've happened.
I know. I saw some meme that I thought was appropriate that I was, like, happy about because, like, yes, I understand, like, all of these celebrities dying is sad, especially ones who sort of like die before their time. I mean, right. like I get that sure. like, that's a thing, but like there were all of those things. Like I saw somebody post something like, it was like 4 days before the end of the year. And it's like, while everybody's praying that Betty White gets through the next 4 days, I'm praying that Ruth Bader Ginsburg gets through the next 4 years,
exactly.
which I feel like let's keep our eyes on the prize here.
Yeah.
Guys.
It's okay to feel sad when someone that's influenced you dies.
Yes.
Also, 2016, like every year, is just an arbitrary passage of time.
Correct.
It's not a meaningful. We made up when the year begins right. and ends. Yes. You know, like we could have decided that the year begins in September and ends in September, and that would have changed the death count. So we don't have to feel right. it's only as doomed as any arbitrary period of time can be.
Right.
You know, and 2017 is also just an arbitary period of time.
Right. Could be just as doomed.
It could be just as doomed. It could be less doomed. It could be a quarter doomed and then a three quarters not doomed. I mean, right. like all time, you know.
Yeah.
It's like how everyone you love will die. But that doesn't mean that you should just give up. Right. Because you'll like get to spend some amount of time with them before this happens.
Right.
Like, it's like having perspective is important in these moments, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But also, what's most important is that we recognize that Donald Trump threw a New Year's party at Mar-a-Lago where
back to Joey No Shoes.
All manner of hilarity ensued.
Sorry.
That was too funny for you to not cough.
I know, damn it.
There were he delivered a 10-minute speech. Oh yeah. He delivered it.
Socks is more funny.
A 10-minute speech where he basically thanked every business partner and person that might be helping him commit some sort of conflict of interest in the coming years. But hilarious. One of his friends that was in attendance was Joseph Joey No Shoes Chinke.
Socks.
damn it. He's a convicted felon. He was, sure. He has ties to John Gotti.
Crime family.
Yeah. He also.
Who else do you want Trump to be friends with? For God's sake.
I mean, it's like the most Trump thing I can possibly imagine.
Yeah, of course.
This is a man who aspires to look and act like a mob boss. So, like, of course, Joey No Socks is there to, like, help him ring in the new year. He was convicted of a felony in 1989 for possessing nearly $100,000 worth of stolen artwork.
That doesn't sound like that much.
I know.
By the way.
Well, it's 1989, you know? Maybe that was a lot. But also, a New York Magazine profile from 95. Was who posited that he was used to be friends with John Gotti.
Sure.
He was also shot 3 times and left for dead in 1980 because after a failed hit.
A hit, yeah.
So he's about as mobby as you can get.
Yeah.
He also, though, operates a company called the American Academy of Hospitality Sciences that basically gives awards to, like, hotels and spas.
Real.
I mean, a bunch of Trump golf courses and hotels and casinos and whatnot have been given Star Diamond Awards for true excellence in hospitality. But hilariously, also, so 30% of the people listed as trustees at the American Academy of Hospitality Sciences are Trump friends and business associates. And Trump is listed on the company's website as its ambassador extraordinaire. He was in a video, a 2009 tribute video for Chinke, in which he said, "There's nobody like him. He's a special guy."
He really is.
But when asked by reporters in May about whether he was associated with Chinke, he said he knew nothing about his criminal past.
Okay.
Which is like, he has a nickname. He's a crime family nickname.
I know. You can't.
He's Joey No Socks.
You can't be Joey No Socks without a crime background. Like that's not a thing.
It's not a thing.
Yeah.
Like, there is no person on earth who has, like, a, you know, Joey Two Eyes Lefty or something name that, like, isn't in a crime family. That's just not how the world works. In any case, there was also another hilarious scandal from the same night, because inexplicably, Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski were just, like, in attendance at Mar-a-Lago for the event.
Right.
And Maggie Haberman, who is a Times reporter, was covering the event and reported that they were there. And then they got mad because and the CBS reporter Sopan Deb said that they were partying with Trump.
Yes.
He described it as partying with Trump. So he called it fake news.
Right, unequivocally, he said, was not there.
He said,
didn't do it.
He was proven to be there, so he said they were there for professional reasons.
Right, there was a photo
of
them there after he said he wasn't
there. They came to his New Year's party to line him up for an interview.
Ah,
this from Joe Scarborough, who also says that he speaks to Trump several times a week. So why it was so important that they be there on New Year's Eve underdressed, as he noted, is a mystery to everyone. But then he wrote a Washington Post opinion piece about the claims that he was there inappropriately that was just like scathing and crazy.
I know.
So he really took it personally. And it just goes to show you that Joe Scarborough is just as nuts as Donald Trump.
Yeah, exactly. Also, he wasn't just underdressed. He was dramatically underdressed. He called himself. What does that mean? Like, what was he wearing?
Was he wearing pajamas?
That's what I'm wondering.
Was he wearing a swimsuit? Like, there's so many questions. But also, this just further proves to me, I read some article in, I think it was in New York Magazine, like a while ago, about how Morning Joe is just like a joke of a ratings draw. Like, it gets no viewers, but it's just so important inside the Beltway that it like sustains, its own importance, essentially, because important people mention it and go on it and then look for other important people on it, but no other people watch it. Because I'm always like, every time I'm in DC, everyone is referencing Morning Joe things that they've seen.
That's
and
so
heard.
Weird because
and
it's not that good.
It's not that good. It's like cheesy in the way that like the Today Show is cheesy, essentially. Yeah. Like, it has no content. It's just that lawmakers go on it periodically. Right. So he gets a lot of like important guests or whatever, but like no information is exchanged. It's just like a fun morning show about politics instead of about drinking wine with Kathy Lee.
Yeah.
Like the whole thing is like a thing that was made in like the, it's all just like a Beltway conspiracy.
Sure.
They have made it important by thinking it's important, but no one is aware of its importance outside the
no
Beltway.
No viewers
think it's important, so they don't make any money on it. So it's just like a prestige thing, but it's like the trashiest possible prestige programming on earth. In any case, that's the news this week.
That's it.
We'll be back in only a few days.
Sorry I coughed through this podcast, guys.
I mean, it's been chaotic.
Sunday, we're both going to be healthy.
Yeah, we're just going to...
demanding it.
Power right through.
Don't get sick.
I'm trying not to.
My cough is going to be gone. Don't get it.
I have been sick for so many weeks at this point that I can't imagine there's more sickness left, but knock on wood, because there seems to always be.
There always is.
Yeah. There's always one person who starts the sickness train.
Oh, boy.
And it never ends.
Yeah.
In any case, we will see you in only a few days, because you'll be getting this on Wednesday.
Right.
But here's a few thoughts to leave you with. Call your congressman, even if it's just to say hi.
Yeah.
And even if you live
in a safe state.
Introduce yourself. Call them. Let them know that you have concerns about... Pick an issue that is important to you. And let them know, you know, if you want to make sure they protect Social Security or Medicare, if you want to make sure that healthcare reform does not go away, even if you live in the safest of safe districts, call your congressman tomorrow and just
let them know that you're watching.
Let them know you're watching. That's all you can do. But it's something you can do on either side of the aisle.
That's right.
And you don't have to... It's not a partisan activity. Anyone can let their congressman know that they're watching.
That's right.
But that's what we should be doing right now, is at the very least. Because apparently watching works. Because if they think we're not watching, they are up to some sneaky shenanigans.
That's right. They will try and...
stupid
shenanigans.
Middle
of the night.
They will try
bullshit
to...
you.
Middle of the night bullshit you with the most obvious, scathing headline-ready plan on earth.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, I mean, I can't imagine that they thought there was a way to not look like idiots doing that, but whatever. In any case, we'll talk to you next week.
Bye.